Okay, so welcome for the last lecture of computer graphics this year. And today we want to finish the modeling chapter. And last time, what I described were data structures to store polygon or triangle meshes. And we saw different representations that some are very simple and just sufficient for rendering. Others are more complicated, but allow you to traverse and to iterate over triangles and stuff like that. So that's the most common way polygon meshes to represent single objects in computer graphics. There are other methods. I already mentioned these, so things like parametric surfaces, splines, or NURB surfaces. I won't detail on this here in this lecture. This is done in detail in geometric modeling. Then there is constructive solid geometry, which means computing with objects, computing unions, subtractions, and so on objects to construct new models. We won't speak on that. Subdivision surfaces is also a sort or a variant of parametric surfaces, and procedural models, really models that generate geometry, that accept a number of parameters and then a tree or something is generated. But most of these for rendering are transformed to polygonal meshes, and these are then rendered. Yeah, so this is really the basic common denominator for rendering polygonal meshes. But nevertheless, these meshes typically only describe single objects. Yeah? So we can describe a table, a computer, a projector, whatever. But on top of this, typically models are still combined to generate an entire scene. Yeah? And this is what we want to speak about today. That's what we call hierarchical modeling, or this modeling is typically done in a hierarchical manner. That's the obvious way to arrange objects. And this is what we are going to speak about today. So as a simple example, let's take the modeling of the Mensa. Yeah? I think most of you know the Mensa. So first of all, of course, we have the building parts, that's walls around, windows, the floor, ceiling, and stuff like that. So that's the building itself. And in the Mensa, we also have furniture, tables and chairs. Now, from a modeling point of view, the first thing you will recognize is that essentially there's one type of chair in the Mensa and one type of table. Yeah? So it is not necessary to model every single table or to provide a real triangle mesh for every single table in that scene and for every single of the whatever 1,000 chairs. But ideally, what we would like to have is that we model one chair, and then we just say, okay, this chair, now there's one chair at this position, one here, one here, one here, and so forth. And one table is here, and one copy of this table is here, and one table is here. And maybe we even want to go further. We want to say, okay, so what we typically have is a group of one table with four chairs on each side. Yeah, and this is an entire group, and now we have a group here, and the next group here, and the next group here. And maybe we even want to say, okay, we have a number of rows. Yeah, each row has three tables. And from these rows, we have one row here and one row here, and so forth. Yeah, so this is what we will describe or call hierarchical modeling. And what it will result in is a data structure that looks like a tree. And in fact, we will see it's typically more complicated than a tree or more general, but a directed graph. So, okay, let's look at this example again, the Mensa example. Yeah. So we have the Mensa consists of walls, floor, and ceiling. I mean, that's polygons that are really sort of unique. Yeah. And now the furniture consists of, now the model we chose here for explanation is that we say, okay, we have a number of table rows, 10, for instance, every table row consists of a number of groups. Such a group is a table, one table and a number of chairs on each side. Yeah, one group is a table and then a number of chairs. And of these groups, we have, for instance, 8, and from the rows, we have 10. Yeah? So maybe that's a bit too much, but I think you understand the meaning. Yeah? So that's a very big tree. And the interesting observation now also is that these chairs here, for instance, where you have many, yeah, each leaf here, or almost every leaf is a single chair, these chairs are very similar. They essentially have the same geometry, it's just at another position. Yeah? Okay. So, how could we improve that? How could we store that more efficiently? And yeah, what this will bring us to is so-called scene graphs. So the idea now is the following. So we take exactly the same scene, and now we say, okay, table, we have 10 table rows, yeah, table row 1 to 10. And each of these table rows contains or consists of the same of table groups. Yeah? And such a table group here, it's contained here in this table row and in this table row. So instead of having a tree, what we allow now is that interior nodes refer to the same inner node. Yeah? So this node here is a subnode of this row and of this row. So it's no longer a tree. Branches grow together again. So more general, we would call this a graph. And in fact, it's a special type of graph. It's an directed acyclic graph. Yeah, that's the type of graph that we have here. Yeah, it's just like a tree, but nodes are allowed to have multiple parents. Yeah, and for the chairs, it's exactly the same. So let's say a table group, yeah, that's one table with 4 chairs on each side, for instance. So a table group consists of the table, and then descriptions of the chair, and these chairs all share the same geometry. Yeah. So now the question is, what information is stored in here? The geometry is stored here. So what information do we store here to differentiate these different chairs? And in fact, that's quite simple. What we store in these nodes is just a transformation. Yeah? We say, okay, chair 1 is exactly this geometry, but under a certain transformation. And the transformation we use is the transformation, yeah, that transforms the chair at this position. And then we have chair 2, that's another transformation. It's just a transformation that moves the chair next to the first one. And the third transformation is again a transformation that moves the chair next to the second one, and so forth. Yeah, so this table group now is just described by the geometry of the table, the geometry of the chair, and then here nodes that store or that keep transformations, yeah, and it just says, okay, now this is an object showing the transformation underneath, the geometry underneath, but under a given transformation. Yeah, so that's rather convenient. Yeah, it's quite simple. We just take these two geometries and then build this little graph on top, and then we have described the entire scene. Okay, yeah, so that's what we call a scene graph. It's not a scene tree, it's a graph. Such scene graphs are very, very common in computer graphics. We will see there are many of such scene graphs available, and they have lots of functionality built in. So typically, they do not only store the objects, as we see or as we saw in this example. Yeah, this is mainly a way to structure all the objects in a scene. But scene graphs, for instance, also handle materials. So you can imagine it is also possible to insert nodes here that now define a new material, and everything underneath now contains or uses this particular material. It also contains things like light sources, maybe different camera positions, background information, yeah, so what is visible in the background if we don't see an object, and yeah, maybe many other information, yeah, is stored or is part of such a scene graph and of such a scene description. So a very simple format that is pretty much outdated, but yeah, very easy to understand, is Open Inventor. And yeah, these examples here use Open Inventor, and as I said, it's outdated, but it has the advantage that it has an easy to understand file format. So this is an example how such a file looks like. And it is just a file format to store such a graph description that we saw before. And so you see components like, for instance, here in this field, a camera is defined, an orthographic camera in this example, so you can define multiple cameras. Then light sources are defined here. Yeah, so we have a directional light from this direction with this color. Then we have background description, material description. So here materials in Open Inventor, this is handled this way, that materials are defined and a name is given to them. And then later in the object description, objects can refer to these materials by names. Yeah. And then we have here a description of the single objects in the scene, and essentially they are simply described using such a group. A group just means, it's a kind of inner node, and the children are then described here in this object list. Okay, yeah, so that's a typical way to do that. There are, as I said, there are many other scene graphs available. Some of them also have such file formats, but this one is really particularly simple to look at. Okay, so now this file format here, yeah, this is just a way to describe such a scene graph, and now there are library functions available that read such files and that then generate a real scene graph in memory. Yeah, so it's a data structure kept in memory, storing all the information about a scene, all necessary information, and the nodes in this graph, it's in C++, so it's object oriented, and the nodes in this graph are all derived from object 3D, and there are examples what these nodes could be. It could be simple primitives like a sphere, a cone, or a cylinder, or a plane, or a triangle, or it can also be a triangle mesh. Yeah, that's real geometry. But it can also be more complicated things like a group, for instance. Yeah, that would be an inner node that still has children. And there are many, many more of these available. Yeah, it could be a light source, a material, whatever. Okay, so now, just to come back to this hierarchical modeling idea, yeah. So one advantage of using a graph is that if we have single type of object multiple times in a scene, yeah, we can by using this graph idea, we can easily generate multiple copies of a single object, yeah, without storing the geometry multiple times, yeah. We only keep the geometry once and then say we see it under multiple transformations. Another advantage is that with this hierarchy, we automatically can group objects and can easily do simple animations. Like in this example, yeah, we have a very, very simple scene consisting of simple boxes and spheres. And we have a chair and a table with a bowl with two fruit in it. Yeah, and this now might look like this. This is a, yeah, so we have no multiple references to the same geometry. So this time it's really a tree. The entire scene consists of the chair and the table group. The chair consists of three boxes in this example, so it's only 2D. And the table consists of, yeah, two groups again. One is the table itself, the other one is the bowl on top of it, and the bowl, for instance, is a box and two spheres. Yeah, just as a very, very simple example for this modeling. Now, the nice thing is that using groups, this is how this would look in an inventor file. Yeah, very simple. It says, okay, so the entire scene is a group node, and it has three children, one group, second group, third group. The first group are again, the first child is again a group of three objects, so these are the three objects of the chair. Then we have a group with two objects, and the first one is the table and the other one is the bowl. Yeah, so that's just a simple way for a textual description of that situation here. And here we can see the geometry. Yeah, these describe the geometry. The blue one is the chair and the brown one is the table and so forth. Okay, and now we can assign materials, yeah, by inserting material nodes. Yeah, so we can define a material, and from now on this material will be valid. And at the same time, we also give this material we can give it a name, which we can refer later on immediately again. But here this is not used. So we have a material node, yeah? And that says, from now on in this hierarchy, when doing a depth traversal, use this material for the following nodes until a new material is defined. Yeah, so by setting this material here, automatically these three boxes will be blue, and then we set the material for the table and the material for the bowl and so forth. And yeah, now this also allows us to simply apply transformations. So for instance, if we want to move the entire chair, we can apply this rotation just to the tree that stores this entire that stores this group here. So we can add a rotation or a transformation node above this entire group, and then this entire subtree is affected. Yeah, so we don't have to apply the transformation to the single boxes, but we can apply it to this entire part, and we can move the table as a whole. Yeah, or we can only move the bowl, and with the bowl, automatically the fruit are moving. Yeah, so that's rather straightforward, I would say. And it's the automatic or the typical way that everybody probably would model such a scene. And now this here shows, yeah, we do not only have these objects, but we also add a node which is called transform. And this node just means, it's again grouping objects, and additionally to the group property, it has a transformation, and now all the objects underneath have to be seen under this transformation. Yeah, and so if we want to move these objects now on top of group, we have to add this transformation node. Yeah, in fact, transformation is a group node, so we could merge these two. And this transformation now controls the entire chair, and this transformation controls the entire table. Yeah, and if we would move the transformation node to here, then we would only move the bowl, including the fruit. Yeah, so here again, now how this looks like if we add these transformation nodes, And yeah, in this transformation node, we can define the transformation, for instance, rotate by 45 degrees or translate into this direction. So this is applied to the chair and this is applied to the table. Okay, now the so from understanding this, I would say is quite simple. Yeah, things like this here. Now the question is, if we have such a graph here, how do we render that? Yeah, we have now represented everything in that graph, but what do we have to do to bring that to the screen? And in fact, that's quite simple. If such a scene graph, or let's start with a tree. If such a tree is given, we just make a depth traversal on the tree. That means we start with a root node, we look at the first child of that node, and then we say, or we call a render method of that first node. What does this render method do in that case? It's a transformation, so it kind of remembers, okay, from now on, I want to have this transformation. And then it calls render to its children, so it only has one child. This is a group node. This does nothing more than calling render of the children again, and then this box is drawn, this box is drawn, and this box is drawn. And because this transformation has been remembered, yeah, these boxes are drawn under this transformation. And when we are done with that one, yeah, we have to erase that transformation again. Have to say, okay, this transformation node is done, and we go back. And then this node calls the next one. And this now says, okay, now we have a new transformation. And goes on and renders all these and so forth. Yeah? So that's a very simple depth traversal that's very simple to implement recursively using methods here of these nodes. Now, an interesting part is what happens if we have multiple transforms. So if we, for instance, also have a transform node here for the bowl. So let's say here is another transform. So when going down, we first see, okay, this transformation should affect the table and the bowl. So we have to remember that transformation. And if here is another one, yeah, for all the children, we have to apply this transformation and this transformation. Yeah, we have to accumulate these transformations. And in order to do that efficiently, what is typically used is what is called a matrix stack. So that means we really have a stack of matrices. Yeah, these matrices are the current transformations. So whenever we see a transformation node, yeah, when going down, now we see this transformation node. Now that means we push this transformation to the stack, yeah? And then we go further. Now let's say here we see another transformation, so we again push this transformation, this new transformation to the stack. Now we have two transformations on the stack, and when we render this, we know we have to first transform by this one and then by this one, yeah? So we can process the transformations on the stack from back to front. And in fact, that would mean if we have a very deep hierarchy, we have to do all these transformations for every single vertex. So that's a bit slow, but what we can do alternatively is that whenever we push a new transformation, we immediately apply it or multiply it to the latest one on the stack, and then we always have accumulated transformations on the stack. Yeah, and we only have to apply the latest transformation then. And that's essentially the idea of such a stack here. So let's assume the stack at some point looks like this. We have three matrices on the stack. Now if we apply a new one, M, this is just a new matrix is pushed to the stack, and this is the latest one times the new one. Yeah? So this now is the new transformation that should be used for all new objects. Yeah? And in fact, M3 is already M1 times M2 times the one a matrix that was pushed to generate M3. Yeah, so always the top matrix on the stack is the accumulation of all matrices that we've seen up to now in this current branch. Yeah, and okay, yeah, so this multiplication here is a bit more complicated than just pushing, because we have to multiply two matrices, But from now on, every vertex can immediately be transformed by this one. Yeah? And we don't have to go through all these matrices. And pop is very simple. Yeah, that's just throwing away the top matrix from the stack. Yeah? And then, again, this one here is visible, and another pop makes this one visible. And now with this matrix stack, yeah, it's quite simple to render something like this here. Yeah, during our depth traversal, whenever we see a transformation, we first push the transformation stored in this node. Yeah, then we call all the children or traverse all the children, and when we are done, before we go back, we make a pop again. Yeah, so that this transformation becomes invisible, and then the next one can push again as it wants. Yeah, so it's very, very simple to integrate these hierarchical transformations then. Yeah, here another example, yeah, how for this scene this might look like. Typically what we should start with is that we load the identity, or that we initialize the stack with the identity matrix. And then what is also typically done is, or yeah, not necessarily, but a simple way is to say push. What push does is that it only adds a new, or pushes a new element on the stack, and the new element is a copy of the previous one. We will see that later on. And then all transformations that we apply are only applied to the last element on the stack. Yeah, that means if we, for instance, now apply this transformation T V F or 1, I think it is. Yeah, then this is applied to the top element. Okay, the top element here now is really on the top. It's yeah. So this transformation is only applied to this one. Yeah. So that's the transformation, for instance, of the entire table group. Yeah, and then we come to the step where we want to move the bowl, for instance. Yeah, so another push happens, and then a transformation is applied to this one. Yeah, and then another push happens, and another transformation is applied, and then an object is rendered, and when this is done with a pop, yeah, this one is removed, and we again see this state, current state of the transformations. Yeah. Okay, I think it's more difficult to explain than to understand, I would hope. Okay. Good. Yeah, so that's the idea of a scene graph. It addresses the point that OpenGL gives us much support in rendering, or any other graphics API, but it's typically on a rather low level. It's on the level render a single triangle given some shader code. Yeah, but yeah, how to define larger scenes that are also maybe animated, where things are moving and stuff like that. This is typically part of a scene graph. Yeah, and yeah, this is the typical functionality that scene graph APIs offer. So first of all, they are typically object-oriented. Yeah, that proved to be very, very helpful, in particular for scene graphs. It allows us, for instance, data formats. Yeah, so we can define scenes in simple files, and we can do copy-paste to copy objects from one file to another, or from one scene to another. It takes care of interaction and picking. That means it allows us in a viewer to, for instance, click onto a particular object and to see information about this object, or to be able to even take this object and to drag it to another position, and so on. Yeah, so that's all functionality that is above the level of a single triangle. And it typically takes care of connection to the windowing system. Yeah, it's the interaction between OpenGL and the operating system is very different for iOS or for Windows or for Linux or for Android. Yeah, there are very different ways to control this interaction. OpenGL does not take care of that at all. This is done by other libraries, and this is typically also solved by the scene graph API. And it can take care of things like platform independency. Yeah? So there are scene graphs available that really work on different operating systems transparently. You don't see, or the same code works for different operating systems. Open Scene Graph, as I said, is pretty outdated. It has been presented or first described in 1992, so 20 years ago. That's really a long time ago. Then in the late 90s, there was people tried to add such scene graph file formats to HTML, so that 3D scenes can be described in normal HTML documents. Yeah, so you can open a canvas and you say, okay, here I see a sphere and a cylinder and this 3D triangle mesh object, and this one can be picked and it can be moved and stuff like that. Yeah, this language was called Vermal. It was never really successful, and I think no browser supports it anymore. But there are again now new tries to establish something to like this to HTML. Open Scene Graph is a rather big scene graph that is freely available, but it's really very big. It has lots of functionality, and it's a very, very large project checking that out. OpenSG was a similar project, but I think died meanwhile, is less supported. Scenix is a scene graph from NVIDIA. So that's quite often used, but it's really very focused rendering to hardware, GPU-based rendering with shaders and all that stuff like that. So it contains lots of functionality for shaders, code, etc. I mean, it's from NVIDIA, so that's clear. Direct3D also contains a scene graph. Yeah, and there are probably tons others I'm not aware of. Unity, for instance, contains a scene graph but has much more functionality in it and so forth. Okay, and but nevertheless, they are all have very similar basic functionality. And just to give you a little idea how they could look like, they are all, as I said, pretty similar. They all have this idea of hierarchical modeling, and typically also are not only a tree but also allow branches to grow together again. So they are really graphs, which allows what we call also call instancing. Instancing is just another word for this idea that we have one chair and we store the geometry only once, but we place it in a scene many, many times just by applying different transformations. Yeah, that's called instancing. And typically a scene graph, of course, the important function is that it can be traversed, and during traversal, for instance, on the scene can be rendered, but also other things can be done on the scene, like finding an object that the user clicked at and stuff like that. A scene graph has the advantage or is typically really necessary. So for instance, it takes care of that attributes are applied in a correct manner, that every object, for instance, has a material, that light sources, or it can be defined to which objects light sources should have an effect, and all these things. This is encapsulated, so that we always have valid attributes. And what a scene graph also can do, and what is typically very important to achieve good performance, good speed, is that this scene graph allows optimization. So the typical one is the observation that, for instance, changing material parameters in interactive applications is pretty expensive, because these GPUs typically work as a pipeline as a very parallel processor, and changing materials or shaders means that every job has to be finished, and then we can change the shader and can start again. So this is a very expensive operation, and a scene graph now allows, for instance, to sort objects such that these material or shader or texture or whatever switches that are expensive are minimized. Yeah? So that's also important property of such scene graphs. Yeah, just here for if you want to play with a scene graph, I would still say that Open Inventor is very well is a very good tool for that. Yeah, because it's very simple. Yeah, to write a little ASCII file that contains a valid scene. Yeah, and you see spheres and things and can drag things around and can click and define what happens. If you click on this, then this one should turn red or something like that. So it's very nice to play around. Since 2000, it's open source, open source version coin is available. And yeah, so here's a web page where you can go and look at examples and stuff like that. Okay, yeah, I don't need to further go into this. If you're interested, look at the examples otherwise. So it has lots of other functionalities, as I said, like picking, interaction, yeah, that you can say, okay, if I move this sphere above a certain limit, then something else should happen, yeah, and stuff like that. Good. I won't detail on that and mainly look at, there's much more than I thought. Look at here at some nice examples. So this demo, for instance, allows to move the chess pieces around. So essentially, you can play chess with that. These are typical manipulators that are available, whatever this is, a light source, I think, for instance, and you can control the direction. So it's a spotlight. It only has a finite cone that it illuminates. So it can change the direction and the opening angle of the spotlight. There are pickers that can be dragged, so the shape of the of this cone here, for instance, can be changed. And it also allows volume rendering, so this is a volumetric object that can also be manipulated, rotated, and stuff like that. It has editors so that colors can be edited. And yeah, this is very nice. That's a kind of, the scene graph itself can be displayed as a geometric, in a geometric representation. So that's this scene graph displayed as geometry, yeah, the root node and so forth. So it's really interesting because it allows to play around, but it's definitely not a scene graph somebody would use for a large project. But there are many others around, like Scenix, for instance, that really can be used to store large scenes and to apply shaders to them and all that stuff. Okay, good. So much on scene graphs. Essentially, that would finish the chapter, modeling, and it finishes the lecture for today, and it finishes the lecture for this year. And I wish you all nice Christmas, and I hope to see you again then in, I think, January 7th already, very shortly after the winter break. Okay, all the best, and see you. Thank you.